Okay, in 5, 4, 3...
Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. I am your genial host, Roger Z, and this is a feature of theworkingmusician.com. Today we are featuring Bill Rankin, drummer.
Hello, yes.
Drummer. And we met at a gig that I do kind of steady in Nyack, New York.
Yes, my hometown. And I wandered in there with my girlfriend one night, and we had a ball. And
O'Donohue's. Let me give a shout out.
Yeah.
It was O'D's. It's O'Donohue's, but its short name is O'D's. You're a drummer, but you've never sat in with me.
No, that hasn't happened yet. Sure,
I think,
it will.
I think I've asked you, though.
Yes, you've asked me a couple times, usually at the end of the night when, you know, your focus isn't 100%. So I think I said, let me bow out gracefully and say no thank you, but next time we'll definitely make it happen. And next time we will.
So it's interesting to me that basically you would show up on the when I first met you, you'd show up around 1 o'clock or so, and I'm playing till 2. What kind of gigs are those that end at 1 o'clock?
Well, I do a lot of private affairs, corporate jobs. They tend to be, the hours tend to be a little bit earlier than what you would normally see in a club, in a rock club or a local bar. They tend to go a bit later, whereas a corporate gig, you might work 7 to 11, 8 to 12, which allows me to go out and maybe hear some other music after I get done.
So it's still a standard four-hour gig?
Most of the time.
Probably the pay's a lot better.
The pay's a lot better. The food's better. It's cleaner work.
These are what we call in the business general business gigs.
You could say that. We call them club dates. Back in the old days, they called them socials. But they pay the bills, and they can be fun. And I do a lot of other jobs, like yourself, working in clubs and, slugging it out, playing the rock and roll.
So, name some of the organizations that you work with.
As far as some of the corporate work or the...
Well, the bands that you play with.
Okay. Favorite band that I work with often is called Lucky Seven. It's a Zydeco band. Zydeco is a South Louisiana type of music. It's real fun party music, and it's always a great time working with them because it's always a lively atmosphere. People are dancing, and
it's reminiscent of ska.
It has some ska elements in it for sure. Absolutely.
Sonny Landreth, guitar player, famous slide guitar player, played in a very famous Zydeco band.
Which band was that?
I can't tell you right now.
Yes, I've seen Sonny Landreth
with King
times.
King someone.
Okay.
But there's a lot of kings down in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah. If you have an accordion and you get the people dancing, you're the king.
Right. So where do you play with the Zydeco band? Where can people go to hear Zydeco here?
Okay. Well, as far as probably the closest place to Westchester, where we're sitting right now, we played a club called The Turning Point in Piermont, New York.
Oh, that's a big gig.
Oh, it's a nice venue, and we play there, I'd say about every 3 months or so, we do a night there, and most of the time, we sell the room out, so,
That's really hard, because that club doesn't have much of a following. It's who you bring in.
Well, that's true, but, we do a mailing list and an emailing list, and we've been around a while, so people do know us, and they're also, there's a small clique of people that we'll go out to see Zydeco no matter where it is in the tri-state area. So you get...
I know that. I dated a woman who just always wanted to go out dancing to Zydeco.
Hey, it's if you get the opportunity. If you're not familiar with the type of music, the name of the band is Lucky Seven. Like I said, we play The Turning Point often.
Do you have a website URL? An address?
Well, yes. The leader of the band, his name is Kenny Margolis. Now, he plays in several different bands, including a well-known band called Cracker. But his website will have all the information about Lucky Seven. There, he has a whole
subpage. And what's the name of his website?
KennyMargolis.com.
Awesome.
All right. Now, a simpler way is you could just do a Google search for Lucky Seven Zydeco. That's the word Lucky, number 7, numeric 7,
okay.
And then the word Zydeco, Z-Y-D-E-C-O. And up will pop a whole array of websites that would have something on us, like CD Baby, if you want to check out some of the music. And
do you guys do original Zydeco or just all
cover? Yeah, we do about 50-50, original and cover. And we vary it depending upon the type of club that we're playing. If we're playing, say, a room like the Turning Point, which is more, say, an original-type room, we'll tend to favor the original music. If we're doing a private party where people are, you know, you want a real dancing atmosphere, we'll tend to do more of the covers and keep it perky.
You know, I just got UB40's Greatest Hits, because
mm-hmm.
I love the way they take Motown songs or yeah. Elvis songs and put that...
That reggae,
beat.
That English reggae variation on it.
You know what? They have hit records. I'm impressed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you ever do that? Does Lucky 7 ever take songs that are standard rock or R&B songs and stick a reggae beat, a Zydeco beat?
Sure, sure. In fact, we usually close a set with Going to the Country, the old
Canned Heat.
Canned Heat song, exactly. But, you know, we do it with accordions and rub boards and a great harmonica solo in the middle. And
does someone sing in that high voice?
Well, we drop it down a couple of keys, but, you know, the energy is still there.
Well, put me on your mailing list, because I
okay.
definitely want to check it out. So you play at that club, the Turning Point, anywhere else around here?
Sure. In Manhattan, we play at the Rodeo Bar occasionally, and we do a lot of private parties in the tri-state area, people who want a real upswinging Mardi Gras.
The Rodeo Bar. That's
yeah.
That's where I met my my wife, my ex-wife.
Okay.
And I took my daughter there like a year ago, but I was very disappointed because the bullhead they have in there
doesn't spew out the steam anymore.
The smoke doesn't come out of his nose, so it's all set for my daughter. You know,
to impress her with
right,
special effects.
And you know, I think the waitress we had probably hadn't even started after it broke. You know,
so she didn't even know about it.
Yeah, she goes, "You mean steam used to come out?"
Yeah, we always joke that it was the exhaust from the dishwasher.
Now, what was the other name of that? I think it used to be called, it had two names.
Oh, Albuquerque.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, and the restaurant was called Albuquerque Eats, I think it was.
That was it.
And then the Rodeo Bar was where they had the music next door. And the Rodeo Bar, the name the Rodeo Bar, kind of became a little more well-known. So they just ended up naming the whole business Rodeo Bar.
What was cool is that the bar was actually inside a bus, a shell of a bus.
Which was a horse trailer.
Oh, sorry, a horse trailer.
Yeah,
okay, I thought it was a bus.
It was a trailer that they used for transporting horses that they opened up the side and put a bar in. And
yeah, I used to love that bar.
Yeah, it was a fun atmosphere.
So who else do you work with?
I work with a country singer. The guy's name is Big Jim Wheeler. The name of the band is Big Jim Wheeler and Wheels of Fire.
Cool.
Play on his name. And he's kind of in the Johnny Cash, real rootsy kind of country influence. Original. He's a big guy.
Does he sing deep?
Very, very deep. I wouldn't even attempt to get close to where he can sing. No, he's got a great big voice, and another fun act that I get the chance.
Covers and originals.
Covers and originals. You know, concentrating more on the originals. We have a CD out. Name of the CD is Going Back.
The name of the website.
Again, Google Big Jim Wheeler and Wheels of Fire, and you'll come up with a whole array of. You know, he's got a video on YouTube. You can get a little sample of what we do.
Cool.
And again, CD Baby carries a CD. If you want to, and then they have audio samples. You can listen to the music.
How often do you play with him?
We probably play maybe twice a month. Sometimes more. Sometimes less.
Now, does he play at that frequency in order to generate big crowds for each gig, or is...
That's part of it. That's a big part of it. If you play too often in a small area, you'll tend to oversaturate your welcome. So, it's a balancing act of playing enough that people know you, but not enough that, oh, him again. You know, you don't want that.
Interesting. how do you balance the bands? I mean, supposing Big Jim calls you up and Lucky Seven has already called you up. I mean, how does that work?
Well, that comes down to being tactful with different situations. I mean, we all know that if one act is not working enough to keep you busy, that it's kind of an understood communication that you have to have. It's up to the artist or whoever's booking the band whether it's worth trying to get a different date at a venue in order to retain the core band, or if it's more important to take the date and use a sub. Occasionally, I cannot make a date that I'm asked to do, and they'll have to get somebody to sub. And, you know, again, it's a balancing act.
Do you ever supply a sub?
Sure. Sure, many times.
Does this ever happen to you? Now I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Does this ever happen to you?
I think I know where you're going. But
right. I mean, actually, what happened today is you were very gracious to come in. I had a band who was all set to come in. And it's a funny story because I had booked them and they hadn't confirmed, and I booked someone else, and then they got back to me.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, the date was yours, it's yours, and then I got a call this weekend. We got a $2,000 gig, and we really need the money.
Yeah.
Well, so does that ever happen to you?
Yes,
where you're playing?
Of course, absolutely.
Now, some guys I work with, I would have to say virtually everybody that I work with, if I'm paying them $100 and they get offered a $500 gig, they're dumping me.
But don't take it that way. By the same token, if you were booked at a club, a small bar I'm talking, and the money's a little on the light side, but you know, you're willing to do it, and then a better paying job comes along, you would tactfully try and get out of your commitment with the club.
Well, what I do, and the people that I work with mostly do, is if they can't do it, they come to me, they know my list of musicians, and they say, you know what, I called so-and-so, I can't do it, but he's ready and willing to go. And I think that's a nice way
sure,
to handle it.
Absolutely. You don't want to leave the leader or the club or whoever you're working for high and dry. That's very unprofessional, because then they'll not feel comfortable booking you again if you leave them high and dry. I mean, there have also been times when I had a last-minute offer for a better situation, and I would call the leader I was first committed with and said, listen, this is what's going on. Is there any way I can get out of your job? And if they hem and haw and it's uncomfortable, I say, okay, I'll honor my first commitment. You know, you don't leave people high and dry.
Right. I know I've had some gigs, like first times at certain clubs, where people subbed out and the quality of the music was such that I didn't get asked back. And that is a difficult issue that I'm faced with, and I think really the only way you can overcome that issue is by moving up higher on the food chain so that your gig becomes the desired gig, not just because the music's good, but because the money's good.
Right, right. Again, when you're freelancing, it's a big balancing act all around, because if you're not working for one band that's giving you X amount of gigs per month that you can survive on, you have to get into that balancing act. And you try to do the right thing, and most leaders also understand that if they're not giving you X amount of gigs per month, that you have to work with the side people in order to make your life work.
So we've talked about two bands you played with.
Okay.
Now, what about like a wedding band or something like that? Do you,
I do a lot of that on a freelance basis, but I also, I guess you call the first call guy for a local wedding band called Summer Wind.
Oh, I love that. The yeah. Frank song.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of learning that song. It's a very simple song, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a very simple song.
It sounds complicated.
Just don't miss the key change, because then
then you're in trouble. But it's just so funny, because I've been listening to Frank a lot. And the thing is even though they may be simple changes, the orchestration is so intense.
The orchestration, what really made Frank was his phrasing. He was always able to lay behind the beat with his phrasing but yet not lose the band or make the whole thing sink.
So he's a behind the beat kind of guy. I'll have to check that out.
Well, not just playing a little bit behind the beat. Also, he would delay phrases a half note later than you would expect it, and just give a very casual feel to the whole delivery. When I hear a lot of people cover Frank Sinatra's song, that's the first thing I notice if it's missing. If they don't get that relaxed behind the beat, behind the time.
Sure. You know, it's interesting because I discovered today that you can get onto RollingStone.com and there's a certain area where you can read tons of their interviews with big artists. You know, they're older, maybe a couple of years old.
Sure.
So I was reading an interview with Rod Stewart. And he gets in that studio. His latest album was basically rock and roll oldies.
Right.
He did cover versions of rock songs, but they weren't really rock songs, like Bob Seger, Still the Same.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, what I do, I get in, and I change the melody a little bit. I put the Rod Stewart stamp on it. And that's what you're basically talking about with Frank.
Right. I mean, but it's like that whenever you cover something, if you're going to record it, if you're going to record a cover, you should do something different than the original artist. Because I can go out and buy Bob Seger's Still the Same. And if Rod Stewart's going to cover it and put his own record out, then there should be something different available to the consumer.
I had the interesting thing where one of the tunes that I do is a Tracy Chapman song, Give Me One Reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working on it, and I just couldn't do it the way that she did it. So I came up with this version, which is kind of a rock version that someone said to me. Man, it sounds just like Tom Petty with a deep voice singing.
Yeah. I mean, a tune, if it's a strong tune, if the song itself is strong, it can really lend itself to different arrangements, interpretations.
My take on rock music at this point, because I still go see the Allman Brothers or the Grateful Dead Spinoffs, my thing is, those bands are like jazz bands in that they have a repertoire, which is the standards of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Mm-hmm. And they're not supposed to make them sound like the original. They're supposed to take them, and they're supposed to put their spin on them.
Right, because it's 20, 30 years later, they've grown as players, a couple different members in the band. It's not an oldies act. If you go to see the Allman Brothers, there's still a valid.
I think it's 50-50. I think it's
50-50. Right. Yeah, you want to hear the old tunes. You want to hear the old tunes, and they do them, but they definitely put a spin, a more contemporary reading on them.
Well, I think the thing with them is they need a few new hits. Because I saw them, and I don't think there was one song that was new that I heard.
Yeah.
Sorry to take a cut on them, but they did it nicely.
They're a really strong band, and you know, Greg Allman was great. I'm sorry, Dwayne Allman was great, but Warren Hayes is with them now, and he's not Dwayne, but he puts his own spin on his playing, and it's an evolved band. They definitely have their roots in the.
Well, what's great is they're not selling records, but they're selling concerts.
Sure.
Anyway, I want to move on to our canned questions.
Okay.
Which I fed you a couple of days ago.
And I try not to think about them too much, so I'll see if
my mind
changed now.
Well, you know, the first question is kind of a weird question in this day and age of iPods, because do you have an iPod?
No, I don't. I don't own an iPod, but I do use the software on my laptop, the iTunes software.
Okay.
So, you know, I'll plug that into the stereo or I'll listen to it, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
The point is, I don't listen to albums anymore. I make up my own playlist.
Yeah.
Like depending upon the day, this morning I'll go to work, I go to iTunes and I'll listen, like, okay, I want to hear, Blue Sky, I want to hear Melissa, I want to hear some Richie Havens, I want to hear Alyssa, and I'll just mix the tunes up. But my question to you is, what two or three CDs would you bring to a desert island if that's all you could bring?
Okay, alright. I have to say, probably my favorite album of all time would have to be John Lennon's first solo album, simply titled Plastic Ono Band.
With Mama on it?
Yes.
Working class
mother,
hero.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's right, Mother. Sorry.
Right. That it's a very stripped down band. It's Lennon a lot of times just playing piano, Klaus Voormann on bass, Ringo on drums. Very simple, stripped down music, but the emotional depth on that album is unmatched, I think.
He was doing Primal Scream therapy at that time.
Right.
I forgot the name of the
psychiatrist that he was.
Right, but yeah, that's. You know, there's certain guys, like I'll never forget once I heard Greg Allman like 20 years ago on like a King Biscuit Flower Hour. It was just him playing Midnight Rider, and it just sent just him on guitar, and it just sent chills down my backbone.
Yeah.
Some guys,
when you strip it down,
if you got it, you got it.
Exactly. That raw emotional power comes through even stronger, which I think is the case on that particular album by Lennon.
Yeah, that's a great one. Name another.
Okay. I'll name a couple that I've been trying to narrow it down to. I'm a huge Beatles fan.
Okay.
So, and I can't make up my mind if my favorite Beatles album would be Sgt. Pepper or Abbey Road. Both incredibly strong albums. One or the other, either one would do it for me.
So I'm not really a fan of either one of them.
Okay.
I like them, but I don't think there's any. There's no songs in there that I feel are...
That kick you in the butt.
Yeah, it's funny because I've been getting these English versions of the Beatles albums. And No Reply is one of my favorite Beatles
All right.
songs.
Earlier stuff, but that's going back to individual songs.
Right. I mean, I like how they put it together.
Right.
But I don't feel the strongs are as... The songs
the
are...
The tunes are as strong as some of the individual singles they did.
Although I like the Hendrix version of Sgt. Pepper's.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me some of your favorite songs on those albums.
Oh, but that's just the thing. I mean, they're albums that all work together. It is an... Pepper is an album. Abbey Road is an album. It's,
right.
It's like a book.
It's like a dinosaur. They don't...
It's like saying, what's your favorite chapter in the book?
Well, I always have favorite chapters in the book.
Okay.
Here Comes the Sun, maybe.
Here Comes the Sun is definitely one of the best on Abbey Road. The whole outro with the guitar solos and the drum solo on Abbey Road. You know, the whole medley with Hollyhock Pam and Mean Mr. Mustard.
She's So Heavy, they do a big...
Yeah, yeah. And A Day in the Life from Pepper. Incredible tune.
How many holes does it take to fill the Albert Hall?
Yeah. And then so it was like either a Beatles album or probably my favorite rock and roll album of all time would be the Stones' Sticky Fingers.
Interesting.
Which was the first Stones album I really got into when I was like 13 years old. So that even though I like some of their other albums, that one it just hits me
stronger
than
that. What was interesting about that album, to me, it was the first time that the Rolling Stones... Instead of innovating something, copied something. Because there's a song in there that's...
You Got to Move?
No, because it's okay to copy the blues. I mean, they were based on that. But they copied Santana.
Oh, yeah. On Can't You Hear Me Knocking.
Right. And that was such... It's the first time they copied another band that was contemporary.
And it was contemporary at that point. Because when did that album come out? In 70... Trying to place it now, probably around 70 or 71 that album came out, which is when Santana really broke.
My favorite song on that is Moonlight Mile.
Okay.
Just Another Moonlight Mile.
Again, going to the stripped down sound.
Well, to me, they were one of the first country rock bands.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of what they do is country rock, and
Dead Flowers on that album?
I still do Dead Flowers. I want to move along to my next question, which is if they were doing a tribute night to you like you were doing at the Garden and you could have multiple sets and you could bring people back from the dead,
okay.
Who would you play with? Who would you play with? Who would you have on guitar?
On guitar? Well, you know, the obvious would be someone like a Jimi Hendrix on guitar who was... just so innovative at his time, and everybody's been trying to copy him since. You know, there's just so much creativity that came out of his playing every time he plugged in.
Well, what's interesting is that Jimmy played with Buddy Miles, who was the simplest drummer you'd ever hear, and then he played with Mitch Mitchell, who's just full of rolls.
Right.
So
right.
Would you fit right in the middle there? Or?
I would try to play closer to Buddy Miles, although okay. I love Mitch Mitchell and what he did with that band, but to be with a strong bass player like Billy Cox they had in that band, you know, that was a great rhythm section behind Hendrix.
I'm going to see Experience Hendrix probably before this show is aired, and it's going to have, I think it's going to have Mitch Mitchell, it's going to have Billy Cox, it's going to have Double Trouble, it's going to have Buddy Guy.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited. Who else? We got a minute left.
All right, bass players. I've always dreamed of playing with Will Lee.
What a fantastic bass player.
I've seen him play maybe a dozen times, and in every situation, he always sounds good. And I don't know if he's always with the best players or if he's making them sound the best, but every time I hear him play, he just makes the whole band sound alive, and I've always wanted that experience to play with someone of that caliber.
Yeah, you know, I saw this band many years ago, and it's kind of a mediocre band, and then one night they had the drummer who used to play with Paul McCartney.
Okay.
And
Steve Holly?
Yeah.
Okay. He's local, he's in New York.
Everybody was up dancing. I never saw anyone dance with this band before. He lifted their game this high.
Yeah. You get a good drummer and a good bass player, and you're locking together, forget it.
Oh. Who else? Well, we got two musicians. Throw in some more. Just shout some names.
Oh, God. You know, and any of the, you know, the classic rock acts of the, you know, 60s. I mean, you could say the obvious. You'd love to play with the Beatles or the Stones. Or,
okay.
You know, anything like that. Those would be the dream guys who you'd want to play with.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Roger.
Did a fantastic job, and I hope to see you and your girlfriend at my next gig, because she just lights the place up.
Yeah, she does.
She gets that party started.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
We done.
Okay.